what is Britain like as a home for the expatriate? A home, is it, or is it a hostel?
Sort of mother, I think.
Oh, I think it's a good place to play and a good place to live in. It's got more sense of humour than most countries to live in.
And yourself, Professor Wimmer?
Again, you see, what I feel about Britain, as it were, is that it is a greater London. That may seem rather curious.
Oh, it's out.
Yeah, I know. But I can explain it. In London, your neighbour can die and be buried without your knowing it. You are left alone. But in Britain, you are too, because there is a distance forever. I suppose if you're a little weak or given to introspection, you may think it rather unpleasant to be looked down upon. I consider that the English are so kind to me because they do not take me for quite their equal. Now, I don't mind that. You see, I'm so convinced it's the other way round, of course. So we're all happy, but I'm left alone. I'm allowed to go on with my work. I'm supported. When I do a nice trick, like my poodle, I get a piece of sugar. I might not get it in France. They would just correct my French. In England, they say, quite well spoken. No, I am happy here. And it is a home, therefore, for an independent man from abroad. He's left alone, and he can go his own way. It's so good.
Well, you know, despite all the cruelty of your kind remarks about the English, there's a lot in that. And the main thing is that they really will let you alone, won't they?
Well, yes, that's a grumble that a great many people have. They leave one too much alone sometimes. Many a visitor here, or from the Commonwealth, or from Europe, or from anywhere you please, feels himself to be too cut off.
Yes, and that is not their sense of superiority, that's their shyness. Because with all their arrogance, they are also extremely shy. They sometimes love to speak to the foreigner, and they damned. That is why I have a dog. You see, I go in the park, and everybody speaks to me, and I can speak to everybody who has a dog.
But
we are in
not anybody else.
Of course not, sir. What do you think?
I must say, I'm a bit puzzled listening to you talking. How comes it that these tongue-tied, shy, coal-in-the-corner English seem to have spread themselves all over the world and built up a fantastic commonwealth?
Because they couldn't bear to be left alone with each other.
We know, of course, nobody would talk to them, so they got off with the job. It may be that. Of course, I have a theory. They fled from their country, from their climate, and from their cooking.
We can all quick run around.
Desserts, English cooking. I think it's pretty bad.
Now, Lynn, you had not the disadvantage of being here in the Victorian days when I believe English cooking was really very good of its kind. Now we're having a pale imitation of Victorian cooking.
I don't know what it is.
I don't know why you can possibly dare throw bricks. I've eaten a meal in King's Cross in Sydney.
That is a fourth-rate imitation of present-day English cooking.
After all, the Australians are up to a point British, aren't they? And they have taken with them
the worst
cooking
thing. Home.
Yes,
the worst thing.
But let me add a word for Australia. They've also added a glorious something of their own, and if I wanted to expatriate myself, I'd go to Australia.
Well, that's extremely kind, but what do you think it is they've added, Winford? Is it cheek instead of shyness?
No, it's gusto. It is a different thing from cheek. I mean, cheek is an European impotence. Gusto is something new that's been contributed from the people who've left Europe.
Yes, a frankness, a readiness to admit that they enjoy life. The English enjoy life too, but think it is not quite gentlemanly to confess to that.
Perhaps it isn't.
Gentlemen, we've expatriated the whole argument. We've left England now and got to Australia.
No,
by some
yes,
trick of Commonwealth.
No, but we're talking about expatriates.
Yes,
all right. How do you think Britain, we've discussed Britain in a very cool and critical manner, how do you think it compares as a home for expatriates to France, say, or America?
Well, for me, there are two countries, England and France, and I'm absolutely equally at home in each.
Well, I feel the same way about England and America. France is a very close second or third. I think most of us feel that way toward France. It's another home.
Or is it a lover?
Yes. Every man has two countries, his own and France. It has been said before, it's true. But don't we get here an advantage, a real advantage of expatriation? We mentioned it already. Cosmopolitanism. If you learn that there are two good countries, because we here at any rate still look upon our country of origin as good also, you are readier to believe that there are three and that there are more. You see, I don't think cosmopolitanism is a bad thing. I think it's a virtue in the right way.
So do I.
If you don't lose your roots, that would be a bad thing.
You know what, I think where we must go from there is to point out that whereas every other country is a country, even the one you live in for the rest of your life, the country you were born in is more than a country.
Yes.
It's an outlook. It's a way of smelling things, looking at them, touching them. And that's the one thing that I'll always preserve from Australia.
How perfect.
I'll always be able to look along a long distance in a certain way. I'll always be able to feel that a rough bit of landscape is good instead of being untidy, and so on. And you've got those.
Yes, I've got the round horizon, which is my criterion. And the horizon is either normal, which means for me round as though I were on the sea, or slightly marred. The first outlook on life remains Dutch.
Yes, and those things you keep always.
And
American
you have people. That too, have you, about America?
Those things you keep always, I think.
Yes.
They're a part of you. You can't lose them.
Well, that's true. For me, if a country isn't mountainous, it's not a country at all. It's just a background for a film or a...
That's unkind.
Oh, but Wales has lovely mountains.
Yes, exactly. That's the point. I mean, if it isn't mountainous.
Oh, it isn't. If it isn't.
It isn't.
But you love Holland.
I do, yes, simply because it's such
it's
a contrast.
For you,
it's
a, it,
yes, it's a picture. It's a wonderful picture I walk into.
Yes, well, I love Holland, but to me it's more than a picture, it's people. But it's not a way of thinking like Australia.
Now, Colin, you've talked about people. Now, as an expatriate, do you think you can ever interpret the English back to your own people?
I think I can, but I think I probably am wrong in thinking so.
Yes. Well, anybody care to unravel that one?
It's perfectly simple.
Very well put.
No, I agree. One never knows whether one has the explanation. But I know that I give to my Dutch compatriots a plausible or acceptable, which does not mean the same thing as true, interpretation of the British. But then there is also this matter of interpreting the British to themselves. That's not so easy.
No, but we're necessary to that. Surely, we're a new voice talking to them about themselves.
I wonder, we've been talking very much in terms of, shall I say, people of European blood as a whole. I wonder if, say, a Chinese living, say, in Malaya, or an Indian living in Natal, would feel the same thing about being an expatriate from India or Pakistan or from China.
Yes, I wonder. Very difficult to say. One always imagines that the Chinese carry their own country with them. But then people always say that we do. I don't know enough about them.
Well, I'm afraid all I've seen of them as expatriates, of people of Oriental or African race, is as expatriates in European countries, and that's rather different. The instances you gave would be most interesting if you could see an Oriental in another Oriental country.
In other words, the business of being an expatriate is common the world over.
Oh, yes.
It must be.
But are its experiences common? Are they general?
That I can't believe. I think they're very individual. They certainly differ with national groups, but also with individuals. You know, I know an Indian, a biochemist, who is so completely anglicized, if you close your eyes, you forget that he's not a European. And I've come across other examples. Now, I don't know whether that proves anything, except my point, perhaps, that there is no possibility here to generalize.
Well, all right, we won't generalize, but let's have a personal confession. If you won't generalize, I'm going to ask you how it's affected, each one of you, affected your work. Miss Ertz, you confess first.
Well, I think it's very stimulating living in a country which is not, you might say, your own country. I think probably it's what one needed, and one has it because one didn't need it.
Colin Wills?
I think you're right, absolutely. And I know that I came here quite deliberately because I felt that in my work, which is sort of observing things and reporting them, speaking about them and writing about them, there was more scope for my particular kind of work here. And I found it so.
Well, would you agree with that, Professor Rainier?
Well, to me, coming to this country, learning its language, and beginning to work here has been a kind of glorious rebirth. In some religions, you get that always, the need for rebirth. Well, you get that when you come and start for a moment being a babe again, learning the language, learning the manners, and learning your way. It's been great to me. A second chance. How often does a human being get that? I feel that I've taken it.
As often as he wants it.
And it's a great adventure, too.
Yes, a great adventure.
Well, how do you feel that England has actually affected you? How has it changed you?
Oh, that's very difficult to say. I think almost impossible to say, because one can't imagine what it would be like to have lived always in another country.
Darling, would you like
to... I think it's improved me entirely mentally, and perhaps made me a little bit more lazy and comfortable physically.
Well, for me, it's broadened me. It's made me love the English, which I did not do in the days of the Boer War. Don't forget that I'm Dutch. And now I admire this country. I don't like to tell the British that. It's not good for them to hear it.
But it is a fact that they are great.
All right, a last confession. Do you think you've done the English any good yourself by being here?
Dear me, I would like to think so, but I can't arrogate that to myself, I'm afraid.
Well, I will say that Miss Hertz has done them a great deal of good by being extremely entertaining.
And Professor Rainier, it falls to you now to sum it up. You've got a minute. The microphone's yours. Well, do us good.
As far as I am concerned, I'm sure I've done those with whom I've come in contact a power of good. Because it is bad form in this country to think. And those I have had under me, like students, or compelled somehow by the clever title I once gave to a book to read me, I've compelled those people to think. And that is useful. I've wakened them up and shaken them.
And I've tried to tell them to be cheeky instead of shy.
Well, I hope you've succeeded.
Well, there it is. We've had our three expatriates. And I think as they talked around the microphone, I felt that they were not expatriates at all. They were home. And I felt at home both in America and in Australia and in Holland, too.
Hear, hear.
And if I only knew a word of Dutch, Professor, I'd say that. How would you say it in Dutch?
Het is alles prachtig geweest en we zijn hier heel gelukkig.
And translate that into Australian, Colin?
Well, I think it means that we're at home here and you'd all be at home there.
You've been listening to a discussion in the weekly series, London Forum, recorded in a studio of the BBC. The speakers were Susan Ertz, G.J. Rainier, and Colin Wills, with Winfred Vaughan Thomas in the chair. This is the British Broadcasting Corporation.